Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
Welcome back in. Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And as we do every Tuesday morning at 7 o'clock, we go to our 1025 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Caroline Fenton, who I'm sure is just riding high on this Tuesday morning. Caroline, good morning. How we doing?
How about them Tigers?
Oh, what a win for LSU over the weekend. Have you come down from Saturday night yet? Or are you still just up there in the clouds?
I think that I'm excited and happy, but I'm not going to let myself be fully 100% up in the clouds until LSU beats Arkansas and punches their ticket to the SEC championship. I think that's kind of like what's holding me back from being just in complete and total 100% bliss. But I was a very, very, very happy girl on Saturday night.
Well, in all seriousness, Caroline, like the job that Brian Kelly has done from the Florida State game until now, I mean, obviously, you know, the Tennessee game was what it was at that early start at Tiger Stadium. But now they've got a chance in his first year to be in the SEC title game, maybe to win the SEC championship. We'll see what happens. What do you make of kind of the transformation with this team that we've seen from the beginning of the season till now?
I mean, even from, like, July, let's say, the conversation about LSU, I remember saying, I wouldn't be surprised if LSU goes 9-3, but I also wouldn't be surprised if LSU goes 6-6. Like, let's not forget that LSU had 39 players in a bowl game in January. And so now here we are in November, and LSU just beat Alabama and holds the keys to potentially getting to the SEC championship. I mean, it has just been a massive flip. It's been a night and day difference. And I remember after the Florida State game, I'm like, look, I don't like what I saw. And it wasn't just, you know, a personnel-based thing. It was a lot of coaching things. It was the special teams issues. It was waiting 30 seconds to call a timeout. It was just overall not pleased with the state of the program. And every single week, LSU has made some sort of adjustments and has made some sort of improvements. And it hasn't been linear, but it really has been ever since that loss to Tennessee. This team has woken up and the coaching staff has realized some of the deficiencies in the program, and they've realized what the changes that have needed to be done. So if you would have told me that Brian Kelly would have had this program in position to get to the SEC championship with three consecutive wins over Florida, Ole Miss, and Alabama, I honestly don't know if I would have believed you. So I think all LSU fans, with even how many question marks they had about Brian Kelly in the way that this program was going at the beginning of the season. Question marks about Jaden Daniels, about if he can really be a starting quarterback in the SEC. I don't know how you can look at it now and have those questions still and not just be over the moon excited and happy about the direction of this program under Brian Kelly.
All right, Caroline, let's play this out. LSU wins out. LSU gets to Atlanta. LSU gets the best win in college football this year, beating Georgia in Atlanta to win the SEC championship. LSU is sitting there at 11-2, and it's either 11-2 LSU or 11-1 Tennessee for the last spot in the college football playoff. What happens?
Man, this is a scenario, honestly, that has been playing through my head ever since LSU converted on the two-point conversion, because I'm thinking, okay, LSU wins out, goes to the SEC championship. Let's say they hypothetically beat Georgia. I mean, after watching that Tennessee-Georgia game on Saturday, that's going to be a really, really tall feat. But let's just, you know, live in fantasy land. That's going to be a really difficult conversation that the committee is going to have, because a two-loss team has never made it in the playoffs. Tennessee blew out LSU when they played head-to-head. So how can LSU get in over Tennessee? But then you can also make the conversation, will LSU beat Alabama and Georgia, and they're the SEC champion? So, like, I honestly, I have no idea. There is a very strong case for either team to get in. And let me just say this. If LSU gets into the playoff and Tennessee doesn't, I am so sorry to Tennessee fans. Because I think that if Tennessee doesn't get into the playoff and just gets totally screwed by LSU, Tennessee is the best team to never make the college football playoff. So to answer your question, I have no idea, because there's two very, very strong cases.
She's already apologizing to you, Robbie, in advance.
I caught that. So, Caroline, with that in mind, what did Saturday's game down in Athens, what did that tell you about Tennessee, and what did that tell you about Georgia?
It tells me that Georgia is going to be really incredibly difficult to beat. It tells me that Georgia is just that good of a team. And I had question marks about Georgia going into after they beat Oregon, I was like, okay, well, Georgia's just that good again. And then, you know, they give up 22 points to Kent State, and they play it close against Missouri. And I'm like, okay, well, which Georgia is it? And we talked to Trevor Maddich from Spillman & Company a couple weeks ago, and he said, I think that Georgia is just a team that is simply that good that they can take their foot off the gas, and then whenever it gets close, they're like, oh, okay, wait, let's get into it now. We saw it against Florida. It got a little bit close, maybe got a little bit uncomfortable for Georgia fans, and then Georgia just turns it on and they blow Florida out. I think that's kind of what Georgia's been doing all season, that they haven't really been challenged all season, you know, not ever since Oregon, and then playing Tennessee, that was undoubtedly their most difficult test all season, and they went into it going in with that mindset and knowing we cannot take our foot off the gas. And that's what I saw against Georgia on Saturday. It just seemed like Tennessee did not have any sort of answers, and Georgia just looked so dominant over a team that has been dominant all season long. So what it tells me about Tennessee is they're still a really good team. They just got beat by the better team that day. It tells me that Georgia is the best team in the country.
So Lane Kiffin's talking goat fuel this week. Don't give him goat fuel, everybody. Because you know, I gotta say, I mean, how many times have we talked about the dynasty's crumbling with Nick Saban in Alabama? But you know, you're talking about an incredible quarterback who might be the best college football player in the country, and that team is out of the playoff, basically. Yeah, no, they are. They're out of the playoff unless an incredible amount of ridiculousness happens all over the country as of early November. So what say you, Caroline? Nick Saban, the Alabama dynasty, goat fuel, where do you stand?
I'm not going to say that the dynasty is over. This is the first time since 2010 that Nick Saban has lost two games before Auburn. So it might make you think, oh, you know, Nick Saban's losing it, so on and so forth. And it is kind of strange that this Alabama team has lost two games with Bryce Young as the best quarterback in the country. And I still stand by that. I think that Bryce Young is the best quarterback, maybe even the best player in the country. And it almost makes me feel bad for Bryce Young. And I hate that Bryce Young's talent is kind of wasted this season on a team that isn't going to be able to make it to the playoffs. I'm not going to say that the dynasty is over. Nick Saban is still Nick Saban. 1 year not making it to the playoff doesn't mean that this isn't a dynasty. It just means that that's the expectation for Alabama, and they just haven't met it this season. I need to see consecutive years where Alabama is getting beat by, you know, their opponents in the SEC, and Alabama is consecutively not making the SEC championship. This team doesn't look like an Alabama team. This team is undisciplined. This team, you know, is committing more penalties than any other Nick Saban-coached Alabama team in the past. So, no, it doesn't look like an Alabama team. But I'm not going to say the dynasty is over, because Alabama is still going to be a game on LSU's schedule, and I'm sure Tennessee fans' schedule. And if you're playing Alabama, that's a game that you circle and you say, that's going to be a tough one. So when I can stop saying that is when I can stop saying that the dynasty is over, when I can start saying that the dynasty is over.
Caroline Fenton, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road from Stillman & Company and Southeastern Carolines, joins us every Tuesday morning at 7 o'clock. Caroline, great stuff as always. Continue to revel in your victory over the Alabama Crimson Tide.
Oh, I promise you I will. On to Arkansas.
That's right. Thanks, Caroline. Appreciate you.
Yeah. Awesome. Thanks, y'all. Have a good one.
We'll take your thoughts. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, Joe Rexroad made a statement yesterday that, based on the odds, I'm not sure I agree with. We'll get to that coming up next. Take your thoughts as well. But first, Michelle Knezovic has a word from Superbook Sportsbook.
Yes, I do. Thank you, Robbie. And listen, right now it is all happening in sports. And Superbook wants to let you know that you can bet on football. We got basketball, hockey, and soon enough the World Cup. If you want to take a look to this Sunday, the Tennessee Titans are welcoming the Broncos to town. They're favored by about 3 points. I like that, even if we don't know if Ryan Tannehill plays. The Denver Broncos have just been awful this year, so I think they'll be able to get it done in Nissan Stadium. And there's no better place to wager on all of that than Superbook Sports. When you sign up, deposit, and wager all in the same day, Superbook will give you a bonus up to $1,000. When the sports world is busy, it is busy to get winning some money. So download the Superbook Sportsbook app or visit superbook.com to wager and win today. Visit superbook.com for terms and conditions. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789.
Tune in later this morning at 8:45 for your chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click and win a pair of tickets to a future Preds home game. Pick to Click brought to you by TJ Anderson Homes of Benchmark Realty. Visit tjandersonhomes.com to see why they are referred to so often. And Superbook Sports, voted number one sportsbook in Vegas. Download their app today. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the Law Offices of Amanda J. Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio on this Tuesday morning. Thanks to Caroline Fenton for joining us in the last segment. We'll have Gentry Estes from the Tennessean come up at 8 o'clock to talk all things Tennessee Titans. So, Joe Rexroad, you made a statement yesterday about Hendon Hooker and the Heisman Trophy. After the performance against Georgia, I think you think it's going to be difficult for Hendon Hooker to win the Heisman Trophy now after the performance against Georgia. So I went and checked the odds yesterday, and heading into this weekend, Hendon Hooker was the Heisman favorite as the Tennessee Vols went down to Athens to take on Georgia. He has now slipped into second place behind C.J. Stroud of the Buckeyes. So there's different odds you can look at. Most of them have Stroud 1, Hooker at number 2, and the odds themselves vary to a certain degree. Right now, Hooker on threes at plus 290. I think on a couple of other ones, he's plus 300, but right there kind of in the same ballpark as number 2. In the Heisman Trophy odds right now. I don't know if I buy that Hendon Hooker just doesn't have a chance to win the Heisman Trophy. What say you about his Heisman chances as you look at not only the rest of the way for him, which does not include another big game on their schedule, but also maybe the opportunity for other guys like a C.J. Stroud coming up against Michigan. Caleb Williams is in the mix. Bo Nix generating a lot of momentum from Oregon. What do you make of the Heisman Trophy race right now?
Yeah, Hendon Hooker's not winning the Heisman. I mean, it's just, and all due respect to Vegas, I mean, Vegas odds also had Vrabel where on the coach fire hot seat coach thing, right? I mean, some of those odds are little, yeah, some of those odds are, you have to take them with a grain of salt. You know, I don't know why I thought of this, but like, when it, you know what my biggest pet peeves is whenever there's like every week someone, and Chase does this a lot, so I'm going to call out Chase right now.
Okay.
You know, like the Tennessee Georgia game, it's a blowout, and then Chase like Vegas knows. Well, you go every single weekend and you will find games that also make the line look ridiculous, right? I mean, every single weekend you could find that if you want to find it. I don't know why I just had this side. Sorry, Chase. Don't fire me. No, Hendon Hooker's not winning the Heisman. Like, I'm sorry, but he's just not. Look, those moments when you he could have won it. And we talked about that last week. I mean, he could have won it. If he played great and they won, I think it'd be over right now, honestly. Because it is a weird year that, like, Stroud is struggling and, like, there's no –
That's the thing, though. Like, Stroud just threw for 76 yards in a game. He was 10 of 26. Yeah.
I agree. But Hendon Hooker's not – he's going to get very few first-place votes after what he did Saturday. I think Hendon Hooker – like, I'll be very interested to see, again, at The Athletic, we got that thing last week. Hendon Hooker, he had my first-place vote. He had a whole bunch of them. He had 36 of 37, and these are people who vote for the Heisman. I'll be very interested. I don't know if it comes out today or tomorrow. I bet you it's really low on the first-place votes. It's just how it is. So who's in first place? Well, that's a great question. So I understand from that perspective why.
Because if it's C.J. Stroud, that's a joke. It's a joke.
Yeah, I don't know. Honestly, like, I could make the case for Bryce Young to be in first right now, even though they lost. I mean, he's not going to win it either because he won it last year and they have two losses. But I think this is possibly a year. Remember last year, you know, Pickett, it really didn't catch steam until late in the year. I mean, Aiden Hutchinson from Michigan, you know, gets to New York. What, did he finish second?
I think
because he had three sacks against Ohio State. I mean, they beat Ohio State. He dominated the game. Boom. You're in New York. And Kenneth Walker from Michigan.
And therein lies my biggest problem with the Heisman Trophy race. Right there. You just said it. Nothing matters until the end of November. And that is not the way that this should be done.
Well, but it doesn't always play out that way. It doesn't always. I agree that was a bad. I mean, I think that was overreacting to one game last year with him. It doesn't always play out that way. I mean, some years the Heisman moment is early, you know. And the thing is, I think Hooker absolutely had one against Alabama. It's tough luck for him that, you know, that he had this Georgia game where, you know, he just wasn't very good. So I think he's going to be in New York, and I think I could see him finishing as high as second. I just don't see – he just doesn't have opportunity now after Georgia to do anything unless there's just some, you know, outrageous 1,500 yards in the last year. But even then, the one side of your argument I agree with, who's the clear leader? And what if Stroud – so remember, Michigan also has a running back, Blake Corum, who should be considered a contender.
He's third on the odds.
So in that game right there, one of those two guys you figure will play well and have a hand in a big win, right? Either Stroud for Ohio State, Corum for Michigan. Now, it's possible, like Michigan wins and Corum gets shut down, but they still win or something like that. But that game is gonna probably elevate one of those two guys.
Well, my point is, and this goes back to what I've said the whole time, the November thing. You know, people are acting like Hooker has no chance now, and meanwhile, he already has taken down Alabama. And, oh, by the way, totally dominated LSU on the road, which is looking better and better with each passing week. And now there's just no chance for him to win the Heisman? Like, I just find that to be utterly ridiculous.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. I mean, like, you can't say never, but for the first place vote it's tough. It's tough if you in the biggest game of the year perform like he did. It's really tough to get a first place vote, you know. And you're right. Like, look, as a voter, you have to look at the entire body of work. And maybe Stroud stinks it up and Corum doesn't do anything all that special. And, you know, you could go down the list. You can talk about Caleb Williams if you want. You can talk about Drake May, the kid from North Carolina, doing ridiculous stuff right now. I'm forgetting some people. Who else? Who else could be in this? We've been talking about Hyatt, you know. Yeah, I mean, Bo Nix.
But that's the thing. Like, Bo Nix is getting all this momentum right now. Yeah. He played Georgia and was horrible in that game.
Yeah.
So
for sure.
But no, because it happened early, it's viewed differently.
But so for me, like Bo Nix is not in my top three, and Hendon Hooker is right now. Okay, so that's just me. I can only control myself. You're right. There's this momentum, but when you step back and compare those two players, my comparison would be they both stunk against Georgia. They both got dominated by Georgia, but Hendon Hooker did what you just said. He beat Alabama. He went to LSU. Bo Nix, big numbers, but what is the Pac-12? It's not the same thing as the SEC. So no, that one's easy for me to keep him under Hendon Hooker. If Hooker plays great down the stretch and no one else distinguishes themselves, then you'd have to give him a chance. But I just have my doubts that no one's going to distinguish themselves. I mean, I think with some of this, it's like the CJ Stroud default thing. If they just go undefeated, I mean, you're right. He was bad against Northwestern. It is a weird year though. I will tell you, it's a weird year with
that's
the
thing. Like, it bothers me, and it's similar to the college football playoff committee type of discussion. You can make whatever argument you want to make and make it look good however you want to spin it. Like, it just bothers me. Like, Hendon Hooker gets docked for playing poorly against Georgia, the best defense in America, and CJ Stroud is now the Heisman favorite, and he just threw for 76 yards against Northwestern. I realize they won the game. He was horrible in that game. But it doesn't matter because they won. Like, that bothers me. Meanwhile, Stetson Bennett, right, apparently it doesn't have any chance of winning the Heisman according to the odds, and he's the best quarterback on the best team.
Well, that's the thing. Stetson Bennett should be in there. Stetson Bennett should be in there. And there's a guy who – so let's say they rip through everybody the rest of the way, and then he has, like, a tremendous game – in Atlanta, which is when voters, by the way, that's another thing that drives me crazy, is when voters vote before wait till you have all the information, man. What are you doing? These votes get,
like, you should have your vote taken away if you do that. It's ridiculous.
I don't understand that. Yeah, I agree. Like, if I'm on the Heisman committee, I mean, it's like, wait a minute, they should also be like, you can vote starting, you know, like Saturday night at 10 p.m.
Right.
After that, like, why would you even have it open until then? That's stupid. If he's amazing from here, then I think he could win it. I think he should be in the discussion. I don't know why people are down on him. Early in the year when we were doing this Heisman, I had him first for at least 2-3 weeks, I think.
Yeah.
Because he was so good early. Then they had the Missouri game, and that knocks him down, you know? So there's an example, Robbie, of they still won. But he did lose. I stopped putting him on my thing, you know, so and other people did too. So it's not like individual performance isn't taken into account here.
Well, it is sometimes and it's not other times. That's kind of the point. Like, it sometimes it matters and sometimes it doesn't. Like, the big narrative now is, oh my God, the wind was blowing 55 miles an hour and CJ Stroud couldn't do anything about it. It's like, okay, great. He threw for 76 yards.
I mean, I think that's true though.
Okay, yeah. But he threw for 76 yards.
the New England Patriots threw for 0 yards last year because of weather one time.
I know.
Right? I think the
point is
some
people pick and choose that. Games that matter and games that don't. Makes no sense.
Yeah. Well, ultimately, in the end, if you're voting for this thing, you have to go full body of work and you have to, like, actually – spend some time on it, which I think some people don't. I think sometimes people just like vote for like the best player in their conference or region. Like, there's a lot of homerism that goes into it too. There's a lot of problems with it. And
we
basically
can get into the
awards.
Ndamukong Suh discussion too, if you want to, for that Heisman one.
I'm still furious about that. He was so clearly the best player in college football, and all these idiots are just like, who won it that year?
I don't even remember.
Idiots. Now you got me calling all the Heisman voters idiots.
615.
They were wrong. I was right.
615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. We'll continue the discussion on the Vols. We'll also get into Vanderbilt and their performance against South Carolina coming up next as well. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Joe, I've had multiple people point out that was the Mark Ingram Heisman year that Ndamukong Suh was jobbed.
Oh, believe me, I was coming right back with that rant. My God, that's right. And the idiots that I'm speaking of specifically, a lot of them live in this region. You know, Mark Ingram was a heck of a player, very good player. He had 1,600 yards that year. He was very good. Alabama was very good. Great. You know, Toby Gerhart from Stanford, Colt McCoy, all these guys got more votes than Ndamukong Suh. I'd like to say for the record, I was one of the 161 people who actually watched football that year who gave Ndamukong Suh a first-place vote. If you watch the Big 12 championship game that year, which, of course, again, you wait till the end, that's why that sealed my vote. Yeah. He dominated Texas so thoroughly, it was astounding. They lost, but he was, like, so far beyond the best player on the field, such a game dominator. And, again, week after week, it was – he was – clearly the best player, but you know, we gotta vote for a quarterback or running back. So sure, it's infuriating.
That's the other thing. Like speaking of the Heisman odds, we talked about Stroud and Hooker and the quarterbacks and all that stuff. Other than Corum, which is in third right now, the running back from Michigan, like you can go down the list a long way before you get to the next non-quarterback. I think Bijan Robinson from Texas is the next non-quarterback on the list after Corum in Michigan. A lot of quarterbacks on there.
So on this discussion, because, you know, I'm getting my personal text line kind of what I said last segment, but to amplify it, you know, like you said, you know, wins, losses, I mean, that shouldn't just be the be-all, end-all, right? I mean, again, Bryce Young, what if Alabama rips through everybody from here? He's incredible, which to me I think a comment on him a little bit as a leader and on, you know, just, I think they're looking at him right now to keep them playing. They have to go, you know, Ole Miss, that's tough. What if he's incredible from here? And you think about what he did at Tennessee in that environment, absolutely incredible environment, not his fault that he's on the sideline while the defense loses a game. What he did at LSU, incredible environment at night. The plays he made, not his fault. He's sitting there, and Brian Kelly calls 2-point conversion. Well, there's two losses.
Right.
How? I mean, he's a great case here of who's the best player in college football. I think it might be him. So, does he have any chance to win the Heisman? I mean, if I say Hendon Hooker has no chance, and I must say Bryce Young has no chance, but I don't think that's fair.
I agree. Well, that's what it comes down to. Like, it's the most outstanding player in college football. That's what the definition is. And obviously there's subjectivity that goes into that and the way that people vote. When you have as many people voting on this as are voting on it, you're always going to have some subjectivity to it. But that's the thing. Like, that's what makes this so intriguing. I'll be honest with you. Like, right now, Joe, it feels like the Heisman Trophy winner is going to come down to whoever wins Michigan-Ohio State. That's what it feels like to me. And it shouldn't be that way.
Well, I think Stroud, yeah, I still have my doubts that Corum is going to win this thing, actually win it. I don't – he's a very good player. But first of all, to be a running back and win this thing anymore, you got to be
– superhuman.
Insane. Now, if he goes for like 250 and four touchdowns in that game, okay, let's have a different discussion. I have my doubts that he's actually going to win the thing. It is a very – interesting, weird year. But again, if you compare like Hooker and Young, for example, the difference is that Hooker performed badly in a big spot and Young has not. So,
I mean, he's also performed better in other big spots, if that makes sense. Like, it feels like he's being penalized for playing against Georgia. Like, he beat Young. He beat Jaden Daniels and destroyed LSU.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, everybody forgot about that.
No, he's played it. No, but I'm just saying he has a bad performance in a big game, and Young doesn't. And even like the Texas game, which was like a bad overall for Alabama, he had his own Heisman moment where he's sacked and he goes underneath a guy and wins the game for them, you know? So It is a really interesting year. That is for sure. And I would not be shocked if someone kind of emerges, kind of like Pickett did last year late.
Let me just tell you, if Bo Nix ends up winning the Heisman Trophy, you're going to see a week's worth of Rob rants from me.
Yeah, well, here's the thing with him also, and this is one problem, Bo, of moving from where you did to where you are. Like, there is like some legit playing on the West Coast doesn't help you with this thing. He's not winning the Heisman.
I hope not. I mean, that's the thing. They got to be 49-3. 49-3.
Yeah.
Let's all keep that in mind. Joe, what did you think of Vanderbilt's performance against South Carolina on Saturday? Obviously, the losing streak in the SEC continues. They put up some points in this game, but just another tough loss at home for Vanderbilt against South Carolina.
Yeah, well, and then A.J. Swan goes down hard, and that looked like a tough one. And so he gets knocked out. Mike Wright comes in, you know, makes some plays. I mean, Swan made the one ball to Skinner was an incredible throw and play. And there's some good stuff out there, you know, and their defense had some moments, but then like the end of the first half, you know, Rattler just rips down the field with some excellent plays. I will say, like Spencer Rattler, you know, obviously he's not what he was all cracked up to be, and he's had ups and downs, and he's not great, but he is still a very talented player for South Carolina. Like, even taking that to, like, Tennessee needs to get back rolling and playing like it's playing offensively, and they're going to be fine. But, like, their defense at night, that's going to be a primetime game at South Carolina in a couple weeks. You know, actually, I mean, Rattler can do some stuff on their defense. Now, I know that I'm saying this after he did it to Vanderbilt's defense, and you got to keep that in mind, but he is pretty gifted. Vanderbilt's defense is just, you know, it's tough, man. I mean, it's just, they don't have the guys, and I'm sure, you know, it's not just that at times, but they're just overmatched. I thought that game was a real chance for them to get that SEC win. Florida, is that possible? Hey, I don't know. Michelle, I mean, the way Kentucky's playing right now, like, can Vanderbilt make that a game Saturday?
Probably.
Okay. I mean, maybe, probably. Right?
Well, I mean, first off, I think it'll be a game because Kentucky always just tries to scare you, just like it was a game against Missouri, and they pulled away. But I think it could be a game, and I hope it's not, but I think it could be.
I don't think so.
I think
Kentucky can turn around, hand the ball off to Rodriguez the whole game and win. I mean, they're 17-point favorites in this game at home. I don't think Vanderbilt's there yet. That's the bottom line. Like, even Florida, like, I watched, and I know Texas A&M's not good, but I watched some of the plays that Richardson made against Texas A&M, and I'm just like, you know, if he is anywhere close to on, he's just going to carve up Vanderbilt. I think they're in it right now where they don't have the depth and they don't have the answers, particularly right now on the defensive side of the ball.
Well, I agree. I agree. If Anthony Richardson plays, you know, close to his level, then I think they can puncture a lot of defenses. Certainly they can get after Vanderbilt's defense. I don't know. I'm a little – just some of these games between all these teams in the East just seem to be weirdly close, right? Yeah. So, I mean, Kentucky, I don't know if you guys saw it. Well, I'm sure Michelle saw it. Like, the roughing call on the punter in that Kentucky-Missouri game.
Yeah.
That was so
what
bad.
A break for Kentucky, man. Yeah. And I don't think, that was a big, big moment. Missouri had a real chance to win it. So,
well, the difference is, I think Missouri has a legitimate defense. Like, I think Missouri's defense is pretty good.
They're not bad. Remember, they also had to hold on. Now, the defense didn't give up much, but they had to hold on at the very end to beat Vanderbilt.
Right.
But transitive football.
Yeah.
Got to be careful with that.
You do. I know it's tough sledding right now for Vanderbilt fans, but, you know, this is kind of what we thought it would be in Clark Lee's second year.
Real fast, Robbie. with the playoff rankings tonight, where do you think Tennessee is going to be?
I think they'll be at 5. That's my guess. I think it'll be Georgia at 1. I think Ohio State's going to stay at number 2. That's just my guess right now. Does Michigan move up? I think they do. Do you think TCU's at the 4 spot? That's the interesting one to me because they were 7 last week. Do you think TCU moves up into the 4 spot?
I kind of don't. My rankings, I put them 4th, and I put Tennessee 5th and Oregon 6th. You know, that's – but I also had TCU – shoot, I mean, I had them like 3rd last week. I think TCU is getting – I mean, they have good wins. You know, they haven't lost a game. I think they got disrespected. But I actually think Tennessee is going to be 4th. It doesn't matter a ton because if TCU wins out and wins a championship, that's going to give them a bump.
Yeah.
You know, but I think the Vols are going to hang in there at 4 tonight. Even if they're 5th, it's the same thing. TCU loses, then you're fine. Then you just forget them and move on to the next challenge.
615-737-1025. Coming up next, it's time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment, let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
And it is that time of the day, time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning at 7:45 here on the program. Joe Rexroad with this increasingly annoying song in the background. I turn things over to you.
I can't wait till the Bears beat the Packers in Chicago on December 4th. Robbie Stanley.
Yeah, that happens a lot.
You just lost to the Lions.
Okay.
But the Bears are just going to be costing themselves. They're going to be costing themselves draft position. Is this another
they might be the most pathetic franchise in sports. I'm not kidding.
I think another apparel bet maybe on the way here.
Oh, huh? Yeah. Let's get Robbie wearing Bears stuff when the Bears beat the Packers.
I am 0% concerned about that. They're not beating Aaron Rodgers. Doesn't happen.
Well, they did just lose to the Lions.
They did not lose to the Bears. I think,
we will see.
It's already happened.
I think maybe. Do you have a cheese head that Michelle could wear?
I can find one.
Do you have a cheese head?
I have access to one.
That would be cool. I just don't know if I'd be able to wear my headphones, but we could figure that out.
So you're already counting on the Bears losing. See, don't be a Bears fan. You don't have to be a Bears fan. Let Ryan go off and scream about the Bears and just – I'm telling you, just
– By the way, playing that game in Chicago does not help their chances. That has not gone well for them.
Actually want to watch this game now just because of the emotional stakes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Could another be a lot. Bet.
Anyway, so I have it's not really a rant today. It's kind of an unrant. It's like the opposite of a rant because – this is a situation that's rant heavy, so I'm going to try to de-rant it, which I know makes for a weird week so far because yesterday I just cried about Facebook disappearing on Katie, which, by the way, still hasn't been figured out. And I continue to solicit suggestions on trying to fix that awful situation. But I want to talk about a situation at Vanderbilt. Wrote a little bit about this today in The Athletic. There was a new development last night. For anybody who doesn't know, Vanderbilt defensive backs coach Dan Jackson put a post on social media. I think it was Friday. It may have been Thursday, but the reaction was Friday. By the way, last week talked about Kyrie Irving and the anti-Semitism that he is promoting. And of course, we've seen what's happened with Kyrie Irving since then. What a mess there. But yeah. Dan Jackson, this was actually, I think a former player of his had a post, I think on Facebook, but it was social media. I don't know. I
think
so
it was Facebook.
Yeah. And it was about Kanye West, who of course has also said some very strongly anti-Semitic things lately and has been under a lot of very well-deserved fire for that. So this is what Dan Jackson posted. Quote, Kanye is two steps ahead of everyone. He's not crazy. People try to silence him because he thinks for himself. People don't want that. Rappers and athletes are taught they need to think the same as media slash politicians. If they have an opinion that is opposite the mainstream, they're called crazy. More people need to wake up and speak their mind, end quote. So the first time I saw that, someone sent that to me Friday night, and my reaction was absolutely WTF. Because, I mean, it's not like the Kanye West stuff is all that secretive, is it? I mean, it's been out there for a while, and the stuff that he's been saying is very strongly, I mean, there's some very strongly anti-Semitic messages in it. So when I saw that quote, I thought, oh my God, you know, this is terrible. And of course, then there's a statement, an apology from him, from Jackson. Clark Lee and Candace Lee put out a statement. He still coaches Saturday. There are a lot of questions for Clark Lee after the game, in particular from Aria Gerson and Robbie Weinstein about why he coached. And so here we go. So last night you have a new development in which he is stepping away from his – it's not written as a suspension. He's stepping away while there's an investigation. Well, I guess it's a review. I want to make sure I say this correctly. It is a review from the office of – trying to find it here. The university's Equal Opportunity and Access Office are reviewing the situation. So that's where things are right now. Here's my point on this. First of all, I disagree with anyone who says when he posted that, he must be fired. I think that you – I mean, I think that is – and it's a term that I absolutely hate. But let's face it. People are ready to pull this term out. Some people, as soon as they get a chance, the term, quote, cancel culture. I think that if you knee-jerk fired someone for that, then I don't think that I think that that is overreacting. I think that you need to look into the situation. Also, I think this is a really tough situation in terms of you're reviewing this, you're investigating this. And he's come out with this apology, which, I mean, I thought it was a well-written apology. And I've been told that that was purely from him. No one advised him. It was his apology. But the hard part is, how do you actually know for sure what's in his heart and his mind? And right. the harder part is, again, these things, you know, we talk about, cancel culture stuff. No, man. This stuff gets actionable, okay? When Kyrie says the BS that he says, and when he promotes this movie that says that the Holocaust was not real, people get hurt. 34% rise in anti-Semitic incidents in the United States in 2021. They'll be interested to see what the 2022 stats are. That's from the Anti-Defamation League, and it's like 2,700-plus incidents. Like, these things turn into action from people who have hatred in their heart. And so that's why it's dangerous. And so the question is, how can you move forward, with him? I think it's not fair to just fire him out right away. I think they probably should have not had him on the field Saturday. And I think this is a tough situation because you got to be able to, you got to be able to tell your Jewish students and fans, that beyond a shadow of a doubt that this guy came about this accidentally. He didn't know the stuff with Kanye West and that he was just supporting him in general from criticism without knowing the context of the anti-Semitic stuff that had been coming out of Kanye West's mouth. That's what Dan Jackson claims. This is a really tough situation for Vanderbilt.
Well, that's the thing, like the investigation part of it. I think you hit it perfectly. Like, it's tough to really, to me, nail down like exactly how you go about doing that, right? I mean, like, at the bottom line, it's trying to figure out what somebody's intentions were there, and that's a tough thing to investigate, especially when you're talking about like a social media post. Like, it's tough to dig into that and get a clear answer that you feel really good about when these type of situations come up.
Yeah, right, and that's so, again, it's like. So, for example, you know, the column I wrote, someone quote tweeted it today and said, Dr. Amy Cooter said, the dude who endorses anti-Semitism with no apparent meaningful consequence from my alma mater. You know, again, this is where it's like, did he actually endorse anti-Semitism? Look, some people are going to be like, yes, I read that. How do you not think so? And I don't know. But you're right. It's very tough to nail down. I mean, I think, you know, this is one of those, you look through like the entire social media history of a person. You talk to people who know him. And a lot of this is the face to face. And Clark Lee hired this guy. He works with him every day, right? Should Clark Lee know if someone like this, you know, has that in his heart? But I mean, is it also possible to work with people and you actually don't know who they really are? I think it is.
Yeah, for sure. It's a tough situation. There's no doubt about it. 615-737-1025. This has been the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning at 7:45 here on the program. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Gentry Estes from the Tennessean. We'll get his thoughts on the Titans as they prepare this week for the Denver Broncos. That's next. This is Robbie and Rexroad, 1025, 1063, The Game.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always on television watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.